Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
California taking on Uber and Lyft. The issue, the people they hire are not independent contractors. Meanwhile, Trump and his drive to cut funding for Social Security. On the broadcast today, Representative Marcy Kaptur speaking out. And later in the show, we talk about prepping our fall elections for COVID-19. Good afternoon and welcome to the Wednesday, May 6th edition of America's Workforce. We call it Labor Radio. We're broadcast from Ohio for workers around the entire world and archived and podcast on awfradio.com. Two guests on the show today. It's been a while since we had Marcy Kaptur on the show. She is the rep from Ohio's 9th Congressional District, which is a stretch. It includes parts of the west side of Cleveland, Parma, Lakewood, Lorain, Sandusky, all the way west to Toledo. Wow. Well, there's three things we're going to get into. Number one, the response to COVID-19 or lack thereof. As you know, Marcy was on the right side of the fence pushing for stimulus dollars and perhaps more stimulus dollars to help out the many, many workers and businesses. And, of course, protecting those workers. That is job number one. Social Security. You may recall, if you're old enough, Marcy was just elected to Congress in 1982, and Reagan was president, and we heard from the president Social Security was running out of money. It was a big story back then, huge story, and a lot of people were scared. Well, they got together, Republicans and Democrats, and they worked out a deal, and here we are today. Same scenario is popping up. So I figure let's bring Marcy back, look back at those times, and figure out how we can protect the next generation and the next generation after that and after that. Right now, Social Security is solvent, I believe, 2034. Things may change because of this pandemic. Medicare is supposed to run out in 6 years. So we'll address that. And also, the post office, we've been talking about that for at least a year now. The Postal Service, as you know, has to pre-fund their health care 75 years out. That really screws them up. They are bleeding money, and many are saying they will go under by the end of summer. Yeah. Yeah, we could lose the post office here, and Trump doesn't want to do anything about it. So Marcy's our first guest. Danielle Root will be joining us later on behalf of the Center for American Progress. This is a real progressive organization. We've had a number of their individuals on the show over the years. She's the Associate Director of Voting Rights and what they call the Access to Justice. Well, you may know about a month ago, Wisconsin proceeded with its primary election, ignoring warnings that doing so would endanger public health, the public health, as well as voters and the people that work at the polls. Well, at least 40 states and the District of Columbia have election systems that, in the absence of further preparation, are not substantially better or worse positioned than Wisconsin to respond to what we're going through now with the pandemic. This includes Ohio, which lacks key policies like same-day voter registration, and where only about a fifth of voters cast ballots by mail in the 2016 presidential election. So, the Center for American Progress says to prepare for the November general election, states like Ohio have to adopt strong election policies that protect Americans' fundamental right to vote and significantly bolster existing election infrastructure to deal with the reliance on mail-based voting. Now, if you look at the numbers here of what happened last week, it was dismal. There were so many people that were confused because they had to request a ballot. If you didn't request a ballot in time, you didn't get the ballot, you didn't get the opportunity to vote. It was so confusing because this was all done at the last minute. As you know, March 17th was the date to vote, and then that changed dramatically the day before, the night before, as a matter of fact. So we have to address this now so we don't go through this kind of thing come November. So Danielle Root will be our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Big story out of California. And this is dealing with a subject that is so near and dear to organized labor, misclassifying drivers as contractors. The Attorney General in California sued Uber Technologies and Lyft for classifying its drivers improperly as independent contractors instead of employees. And as a result, no workplace protections, no benefits. I mean, it's pretty much you're on your own. Several California cities joined the state in the lawsuit, saying the company's misclassification harms workers, law-abiding businesses, taxpayers, and society. Uber and Lyft did not respond for a request to comment. The companies in the past have said their drivers were properly classified as independent contractors, adding that the majority of them would not want to be considered employees. So they can be flexible. That's how they position them. The Attorney General said Uber and Lyft drivers lack basic worker protections, including sick leave and overtime payment. Sometimes it takes a pandemic to shake us into realizing what that really means and who suffers the consequences. Uber and Lyft drivers who contract the coronavirus or lose their job quickly realize what they're missing, according to the California Attorney General. Hats off to California for taking the lead on that. And as I indicated, other states are going to jump in as well. And Social Security, Trump, apparently a couple of days ago, he made his strongest statement yet that he is ready to gut Social Security. He actually sat in front of the Lincoln Memorial and stated, this is a direct quote, "We're not going to do anything without a payroll tax." That prompted a statement from the Alliance for Retired Americans. And we've had Rich Fiesta on the show many, many times. He said, "Mr. President, you can't have it both ways. Cutting Social Security's dedicated funding isn't protecting Social Security. It threatens to starve the system and puts our earned retirement benefits at risk. This is outrageous, callous, and cruel for the president to hold the American people and seniors in particular hostage if Congress doesn't go along with his plan to gut Social Security for current and future retirees." Now, Trump is pretty slick on this. He has said many, many times, "I'm not going to cut Social Security." Well, what he's doing here, he's cutting the funding for Social Security. So they would have to come up with money somewhere else. Where's that going to come from? 6.2% of your employer pays into Social Security, and then you pay 6.2%. Added up, that's 12.4% on every paycheck. That's the payroll tax, and that's what Trump wants to cut. Got to stop this. This is madness. This is clear madness. You can find more at retiredamericans.org on that. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce, and Marcy's going to talk about that as well. Marcy Kaptur, representative from the 9th District, coming up next, and you are listening to America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
LIUNAV, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong, we're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The Food and Drug Administration has recently reported that the heartburn medication Zantac is linked to cancer. Zantac has been linked to a variety of cancers, which include bladder, colorectal, kidney, liver, pancreatic, and stomach. So if you or a loved one took Zantac and developed any of these types of cancer, you need to call Kelly and Ferraro, 216-575-0777. Let me repeat that number, 216-575-0777 for a free case review. You may be entitled to compensation from the drug manufacturer.
This special message goes out to all veterans and dependents of veterans who are living in Cuyahoga County. The Cuyahoga County Veterans Service Commission proudly provides a wide variety of services and assistance, including the following: filing VA claims, helping obtain disability or widow pensions, assistance obtaining military records, memorial affairs, social work, rent or mortgage assistance, utility bills, food, clothing and hygiene, and VA medical transportation. For more information about these services or your eligibility, call 1-844-405-VETS. That's 1-844-405-8387. Or go online to CuyahogaVets.org. The Cuyahoga County Veterans Service Commission, veterans helping veterans since 1886.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Good afternoon and welcome back to America's Workforce, broadcast from Ohio for workers around the entire world and archived and podcast as well on awfradio.com. Let's go to line number one and welcome a dear friend. Haven't had her on for a while, and we've got lots to talk about. You may recall back in the early 80s, President Reagan at the time was trying to fix Social Security, and one of those on board was Marcy Kaptur. I believe she was a newcomer back then. Well, she's still in Congress. We're very lucky to have her. And we're going to do two segments here on America's Workforce. We're going to talk about Social Security, but right now we have to talk about what's going on, not just in northeastern Ohio, but around the entire world, and that is the coronavirus. Representative Kaptur, welcome back to America's Workforce, and how are you doing in the midst of this pandemic?
Well, Flash, thank you so very much. It's a pleasure to be on your program again and to say to all of your listeners, stay safe, stay calm, and stay well. Thank you so very much.
Absolutely. And as you know, people are slowly getting back to work. Hopefully they're getting the personal protective gear that they need to do their jobs. We're hearing otherwise. I'm sure you're getting a earful from people on that subject, but talk to me. Let's start out about hazard pay. Let's talk about these protections. President Trump says people have what they need. I don't think that's the case. What's your point of view?
Well, you know, he's pretty much disconnected from the street, and if I look at the region that I represent, the lack of protective equipment for first responders. We had police forces here in Ohio that did not have proper masks. Mm-hmm. We had firefighters that were using equipment that they had, but that was not proper to protect them from COVID-19. And we had nurses on the front lines here in Ohio. You just need the statistics from the state. Over a fifth of those who've contracted COVID have been nurses and emergency responders in our hospitals. They did not have the protective equipment. So I guess there are some people who have blinders on, but I don't have blinders on because we talk to the families. We look at the information that Dr. Acton, who heads the health department here in Ohio, has put together. And what truly, we have signs all over the region saluting our heroes and heroines. 75% of the individuals who are working these front lines are women, and we have to pay attention in our nursing homes, in our hospitals, in our emergency response units, and we can't thank them enough. We just simply, and what they are dealing with is life and death. It's a hard job.
It really is. They're on the front lines here, and you're right. They are heroes. There's no question.
We talk about hazard pay, you bet.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I know Sherrod Brown has introduced a couple of things in the Senate to help them out. I mean, to the point where they'd be making an extra $25,000 a year. But Representative Capter, you know as well as I, a lot of good bills, progressive legislation seems to die in the halls of the Senate. That's where we need to change some faces over there, hopefully move forward in the right direction here for American workers. With that being said, what else can be done at this juncture to, we have got the stimulus, and I like to talk about the stimulus too, because small businesses, some people were supposed to get some funds. We're hearing some organizations got some money from the government, and they probably should not have gotten the money. They've returned the money to the government. Where's the accountability here? Let's just focus on that for now.
Well, that's a very good question, because we are trying to track the money that members like myself voted for. And believe me, it isn't easy. The agencies are dispensing money to states. I'm trying to track the money that's coming to Ohio and into our district. Unfortunately, Ohio was not one of the favored states. We did not get, but for three communities, the kind of funding we should have gotten from the local government fund. And now they're talking about more money, another bill. Well, I'm still analyzing who got the money. So it's really important for accounting classes, for retired accountants, to take a look at what we could have gotten and who ended up getting the money in the first tranche, right? Now there's a tranche coming directly to the state of Ohio. I believe they received it about a week ago, $4.53 billion. That's with a B on it. And now the question is, where is that going to go? Statewide, and who's going to get that in order to try to help all the needs that we have here? You mentioned the small business funding. When you think about it, the Small Business Administration, as an instrumentality of the government of the United States, only handles about 1% a year of all business loans that go through the banks of this country. Mm-hmm. So what happened was, when the legislation passed, and it was very well-intentioned, the SBA was designated as being the funnel through which the country had to go. Well, how do you push 99% of businesses that are in trouble, right, because of this, through a small window like the SBA? And that's what happened. And their computer systems crashed. In Cleveland, we have a phenomenal SBA director, Gil Goldberg, who has just been working with his team. He had to put on some extra people around the state just to handle the volume. There were thousands and thousands of businesses in Ohio that needed help. And so it's been a really trying circumstance for the SBA just because of the volume. So my hope is that not all businesses are in as much trouble as some are, and that, in fact, if you look at the loans that were to help with the payroll protection, they total just in Ohio over $14 billion, that's with a B, and over 1,200 small businesses have already taken advantage of another program called the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, which is a $10,000 economic injury grant that goes to you just to help you survive until we can get back to work. So there were 1,200 Ohio small businesses that qualified for that. If you get that, you don't qualify for the loan. You get one or the other. But the point is, SBA is really willing. They're trying hard to help people, but the volume was massive.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, too, you heard of the companies, what is it, Shake Shack, Ruth Chris Steakhouse, and these are multi-million, if not billion-dollar companies that they could get through this. And how that happens, is it because the money speaks volumes in Washington? Is that why they get this kind of money?
I think it was who their banker was. The bigger the bank and the bigger the customer, they were in line first before businesses out here, like the food trucks, let's say, that are doing business all over northern Ohio, even knew that there was a loan program. And so Chase Manhattan's customers, they found out right away. All the Wall Street banks and all their subsidiaries around the country, they had their folks, they had them in line. And, of course, the Secretary of Treasury is a Wall Street man himself, so, you know, that's how he would think.
Sure. And correct me here if I'm wrong. Did I hear something like the banks are making like 5% on each of these loans, something like that?
I don't know what they, you know, banks make money by making loans. So the main job of the Secretary of Treasury is to keep the banks alive in a recession.
Yeah.
So that is his primary purpose. And I don't think that in the way that he dealt with the Congress, I'm talking about the membership, not just the top leaders who are all coastal, right? They're not from our part of America. I did not care for the way that he dealt with the Congress, if you want to know the truth.
I hear you. Well, that's what we're trying to do. Get to the truth here. Get to the bottom of things. You mentioned to me going into the interview.
By the way, could I interrupt you, Flash, just for a second? Several members, Democrat and Republican in northeastern Ohio, applied for money from Secretary Mnuchin to go to Lorain County, to the counties that wrap around Cuyahoga County, okay, to get more local money coming into those jurisdictions. We work very closely with NOAACA. You probably know them. And they were denied by the Secretary of Treasury. Even though the population of that region is over 500,000 people, collectively, they went and he denied them.
That's
and the same
sad.
Thing happened
That's...
in northwestern Ohio through a similar organization to NOAACA. They applied because they had over 800,000 people, and they were denied. And so only the communities that had 500,000 people or over, like Cuyahoga County, did get distribution from the COVID-19 local government fund, but the rest of Ohio really didn't. You know, down in Columbus, the capital city, and Franklin County, they got money, but you look all across my district, Lorain County, Erie County, Ottawa County, Lucas County, they didn't. Wood County, Sandusky County, Fulton County, they got zero out of the allocation from the U.S. Treasury. So it's very uneven, and it's unfair, and he doesn't recognize that. Or, well, he won't recognize publicly that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just wondering, are those like the areas that are being denied, are they Democratic strongholds? I mean, we've heard stories about how Trump has targeted the Democratic states, the ones that have Democratic governors getting help and the other ones don't. Is this kind of the same scenario here, what you're saying?
Well, I don't really know what the president's opinion is on all of this, but it was very strange to have a 500,000-person threshold put on $67.5 billion that was to be distributed among communities. And I've really said to myself, I think what was going on, and I'm trying to do the research with my staff to figure this out, that actually benefited this high-tax states, got a big tax break. They got a refund from this bill. Ohio is not one of those states, by the way. It is not a high-tax state. And so states like New York and jurisdictions within them benefited, including Wall Street benefited big time. San Francisco, Chicago, those places, they are high-tax areas. I think what was going on was a prejudice toward high-tax areas and compensating for what the Trump tax bill, the harm it did to those states. I think that's what was going on with that provision. Because I simply could not understand. Donald Trump began his campaign in 2020 in Toledo, Ohio, and he had which is not over 500,000 in people, but it's not a small city. It's over 300,000 people. They didn't get a dime.
Crazy. Can you stay with us for another segment here, Marcy?
I would be honored.
Good. Marcy Kaptur, representative since her 1980s here. We're going to talk about Social Security. As you know, Social Security needs some help, and Marcy was there back in the early 80s when Ronald Reagan made that plea. Different case, though, now. We'll continue right after this. You're listening to America's Workforce, back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
Wash your hands, avoid sick people, and touching your face. There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
You won't find more comprehensive coverage of the issues most important to Ohio's labor trades than in the pages of the Labor Citizen. The full-color tabloid is delivered to thousands of union construction workers each month, providing reports from local unions, interesting feature stories, and news that impacts Ohio's union construction industry. But the only way this valuable monthly publication can be delivered to your mailbox is if your local union decides to join. If your building trades union membership is not receiving the Labor Citizen, ask why at your next regular meeting or send an email to info@laborcitizen.com.
For over 20 years, Organized Labor has turned to the BMA Media Group for its communications and events needs because the BMA Media Group knows how to positively impact labor's issues and spread the union message. The BMA Media Group is a union marketing, public relations, production, and events firm. So BMA Media knows what it takes to market union value for you. To learn how the BMA Media Group can assist your labor organization, just visit www.bmamedia.com.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
Good afternoon and welcome back to America's Workforce, broadcast from Ohio for workers around the entire world and archived as well as podcast on awfradio.com. Let's go back to our live line rejoin, Representative Marcy Kaptur. Marcy, I want to talk about Social Security. In fact, I've been reading for the past couple of weeks here, hearing about this payroll tax cut. Donald Trump says it's got to happen. Here's my problem with that. People don't understand, and I'm sure you can talk to anybody on the street and ask them, hey, what do you think? Payroll tax cut? Oh, yeah, great idea. Most of the people do not realize that funds Social Security. And here we are, prior to COVID-19, Social Security, and we have the Alliance for Retired Americans. You're pretty familiar with that organization, talking about scrapping the cap on Social Security because, what is it, after $137,000, people don't contribute. And so the people that are very wealthy, like Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, on day one, they're done paying into Social Security. Anyway, that being said, where are we going with this whole thing? Is Trump trying to gut this program? He says he's not, but then again, when you talk about cutting the payroll tax, it makes me worried. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, there are a lot of things the president says, but then does the opposite. We've come to see this, and I could give you a long list. First of all, to your listeners who care about Social Security, the trust fund is solvent. There's over almost $3 trillion in the Social Security Trust Fund. And as workers pay their taxes, monies go in there, and they even earn interest every year. For this year of 2020, it will earn about $77.6 billion. And so when you think about it, on the one hand, the president agreed to Congress's desire to send $1,200 to every senior in our country, which most of them are getting deposited in their deposit accounts now related to COVID-19. But we've heard that the Secretary of Treasury and the president and Republicans are doing what you're saying. They're proposing a full payroll tax hiatus, which means neither workers nor employers would pay into Social Security for the foreseeable future, which would harm Social Security. And we have a bill in Congress. I'm a co-sponsor of that. It's H.R. 860. It's the Social Security Act 2100 to eliminate the income cap on payroll taxes. So depending on how much you earn, you pay a certain amount into the Federal Insurance Corporation of America, FICA, and that is your trust fund for when you retire. And for a long time, Wall Street has tried to get their hands on it. Back when I first ran for office, that was a huge issue in that campaign because President Ronald Reagan and the Republicans wanted to get rid of Social Security as we have known it.
Representative Kaptur, talk to me about those days. You were just entering the halls of Congress back then. What was it, 82, 83, something like that? And I remember the stories. Yeah, I remember the stories. Oh, we have to do something. Social Security is going bankrupt. I remember that all too well. Talk to me about those times. They were different times in America, but we still have the same issue here with Social Security. Can we reflect back on that?
We were coming out of a deep recession at that time.
Uh-huh.
And one of the issues had been President Reagan's proposal to alter Social Security and eliminate it. And I was one of the people elected to that Congress that said, we are going to refinance Social Security and make it solvent for the next generation. And we did. And there was a big report that we based our votes on back then. We rolled members of Congress into the system. We rolled public workers into the system. We did a lot of things in order to fix Social Security at that time. That would be the approach I would like to take now. We did increase the income cap on payroll taxes back then. So there was more than one thing that we did that allowed us to fill the gap and to meet the needs of this current generation who have retired. And it was wonderful. I remember Claude Pepper of Florida on the floor just expounding, you know, and maybe we should have that again. There is a bill, as I mentioned, done by John Larson of the state of Connecticut. It's a great bill. I may not agree with him that that's the only thing we should do is to raise the payroll cap. We can do other things as well. There was a commission that was put together back in those days, and we followed the dictates of a bipartisan commission that had been established and completed their report, and we passed the bill in April of 1983. Mm-hmm. And every senior in this country that gets their Social Security check for all the work they did, and because of what we did, every month they get that check.
There you go. So it can be fixed. That's the point. Here's the problem. You know we have a very divided Congress. Politics are so divided today. Can anything like that be done with an environment like this?
I certainly hope so, and I hope that the president would have an awakening and see that the longer you wait to handle this financing issue, the more difficult it is down the road. And we have some members of Congress that want to privatize this program, but we've seen what's happened with 401k plans that lose half their value in recessions like we're having now. We've seen people lose their retirement funds. This is just what the name says, security, social security. It's meant to be the foundation stone of your retirement planning.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that so many people think that this payroll tax is something that needs to go away. And whoever framed it that, boy, they were clever. They were clever because it's a right-wing attack on a very good program. And think about how many people would be living in poverty today if it wasn't for Social Security. You realize that? I heard numbers something like 40% increase, especially among seniors that wouldn't be able. I mean, they use it to pay for their medications on a monthly basis because, you know, the prescription drug programs don't go far enough. It's just really sad. We can't go down that road. And hopefully your colleagues will stand up to this because we cannot allow this to happen in America, no doubt
there
about that.
You know, 200 co-sponsors on Mr. Larson's bill, H.R. 860. So all we have to do is get a few more and bring it up.
There you go. We got a couple of minutes left, and this originally I wasn't going to talk. I've been hearing a whole lot about the Postal Service, and I'm sure you're getting an earful as well that it may run out of money by the end of summer, maybe September. Again, Trump doesn't want to give them any money. There was money available in the stimulus, but they gave him a loan. That's about it, which has to be paid back. A lot of the stimulus money does not have to be paid back. Here's another issue, too. We have to save the Postal Service. Do you realize how much a first-class letter is going to cost if we had to go through FedEx or some private company?
Yes, and I think some of those costs would go up because the Postal Service delivers to every home and every business, no matter where. They have the lowest rates if you're shipping a box or you're sending a letter. Personally, I believe that they should be allowed to do more at the counter. I have been pushing for that during my career. We have many neighborhoods with no banks now, no credit unions. Mm-hmm. They're completely financial deserts. In those neighborhoods, the post office could handle certain check cashing and even deposits through the banks that they would have a correspondent relationship with. But there are problems, and what's happening in those neighborhoods is predatory lenders, and I call them gouging. Financial intermediaries have come in, and people are getting in terrible situations with their finances. They don't realize what they're signing. Some of these auto title loans and all, and they end up in deep debt. So we need to have regular banking for everyone in this country. And the Postal Service should do its regular work, and they do it profoundly well. And
yeah,
they go to every household. And I don't want some other organization that isn't federally sponsored coming to my door. I really trust the Postal Service. I think Americans do. They know their carrier, although it's become more difficult with carriers getting switched around just to kind of fill in because they've had this tremendous load on them to pay off a 75-year pre-financing of their pension fund, for heaven's sake. Nobody else in America has to do that. And that's why, though they're making money as the Postal Service, they're being forced to constrict internally because they're trying to pre-fund their pension plans at a level that no one else really does. So their board is weak at the national level. I think it's been purposely kept weak. And I think preserving the Postal Service should be one of the top issues in the presidential campaign. That's how strongly
Amen.
I feel about it. And I think the American people would unite, regardless of party or political persuasion. They know what a great job the Postal Service does.
Amen. All right, we're going to leave it on that note. We have to protect our workers with COVID-19. We have to strengthen Social Security, and we have to save the post office. A few things to do. Okay. You know, Marcy, let's do this again in the fall or maybe late summer. Let's talk some more as we get closer to these issues. And hopefully we'll get out of this. Well, I think this virus is going to be around a while. I hope there's a lull at least so we can catch our breath. So you take care, be safe, and keep up the fight there. We need more people like Marcy Kaptur. Okay.
Thank you, Flash. Thank you so much. And to all your listeners, and have a very good spring. Stay safe.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Marcy Kaptur on our live line. You're listening to America's Workforce, back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output, a 500,000 strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Good afternoon and welcome back to America's Workforce, broadcast from Ohio for workers around the entire world and archived as well as podcast on awfradio.com. Before we get to our second guest, just want to do a shout out here for the Painters and Allied Trades, IUPAT, one of our sponsors. They have ramped up their outreach to inform and help members of their union, the Painters and Allied Trades, set up the Finishing Industries Disaster Relief Fund and seeded that fund to assist members who face serious financial need as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Members and friends of workers are encouraged to contribute to the fund. If you go to the website, iupat.org, you can help them out. And also posted there is a May Day message. This was from last Friday, President Ken Rigmaiden, who delivered a message of solidarity during these trying times. And boy, I tell you, we need more of those messages, no doubt about that. Let's talk about voting. Let's go to line number two right now. And joining us from Washington is Danielle Root. Danielle is Associate Director of Voting Rights and the Access to Justice on behalf of the Center for American Progress. Great organization, AmericanProgress.org. Danielle, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you've been analyzing what's going on here with the voting. And I'll tell you, ever since Bush versus Gore, it seems like we haven't gotten it right here. The hanging chads down in Florida. I know we have early voting. And now with the pandemic, there was so much confusion, especially here in Ohio. I mean, hours before the voting deadline on March 17th. I'm sure you followed that. Governor DeWine said, no, we can't do it. He wanted to protect the poll workers. Good idea. Different case in Wisconsin. Were you surprised by what happened in Wisconsin? In fact, that involved the U.S. Supreme Court, right?
Exactly. I think I was more horrified by what occurred in Wisconsin, more so than shocked. You know, I think that the state legislature there has made clear for years now that it really doesn't have any interest in protecting voters and voting rights for that matter. So not so much shocked, but certainly horrified by the lack of precautions that the legislature chose to take in failing to delay the election and to put into place important policies that would have actually protected voters and election workers much better than what actually occurred when they held their primary.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that one, it didn't turn out the way the conservatives wanted it. Apparently, wasn't there a Supreme Court justice or somebody that was appointed and the Democrat won in that case, right?
That's correct.
Didn't work out that way. And that was just a different form of voter suppression. So talk to me about what's going on in the country here. I mean, are you concerned because first of all, this is a difficult situation. We hear about voter suppression in a number of states. I think it was in North Carolina. Some people had to drive like 200 miles to a polling place, which was absolutely ridiculous. That case ended up in court. Now you throw in COVID-19, and we're hearing about maybe mail balloting because, you know, we don't want to, we want to protect the poll workers and the people that go to the polls. So where are we now with this situation? What's at stake here, Danielle?
there's a great deal at stake. So I think that Wisconsin is really served as a warning to the rest of the country. You know, Wisconsin actually has, you know, pretty good voting policies in place besides their horrific voter ID law. They have policies like no excuse absentee voting, early voting, online and same day voter registration, those kinds of things that really do help ensure that voters can access the democratic process and that their votes are actually counted once they actually cast their ballot. So fairly good policies in place. The problem in Wisconsin was really that of a lack of adequate infrastructure to deal with the pandemic and particularly to deal with huge influxes of absentee ballots. So more than seven times the number of absentee ballots in Wisconsin were requested this year compared to 2016 general election. And the state was just totally unable to handle that. And that's not unique in this country. So through our analysis, we found that at least 40 states in D.C. have election systems that, without further preparation before November, are not substantially better or even worse positioned than Wisconsin to respond to the pandemic. And these states either have terrible policies, inadequate infrastructure, or both. So unless these states prepare by bolstering their infrastructure and adopting good policies before November, they're not going to be prepared. And unfortunately, Ohio is in that group of states because it lacks same-day voter registration, which is critical this year because we know that people are going to miss registration deadlines because they're either sick, they're acting as caregivers, or they're otherwise enveloped and distracted by everything that's going on with job loss and, you know, just their lives being disrupted by COVID. We need strong voter registration policies in place. And unfortunately, Ohio does not have same day. And in 2016, only about 22% of votes were cast by mail. And we're expecting rates to be significantly higher this year because people want to vote from the safety of home.
Sure. Sure. Oh, yeah. So 40 out of 50 states are in trouble on this. And you do the math on that's 80% of the country. When it comes to the states, 80% of the country. Now, the fix on this, you talk about same-day voter registration. Is this going to take a large influx of money on the federal level in order to get where you want to be? Is that what's needed here, Danielle?
Yes. So in addition to expanding opportunities to vote by mail and infrastructure for the state to handle that, states need to implement at least 2 weeks of early voting, online voter registration, same day, ballot tracking systems, all of that good stuff. That costs money. State budgets do not have the funding in place to implement all of these necessary changes to fortify elections against the pandemic. This is why Congress needs to step up and provide states with the necessary funding through emergency appropriations. Now, the CARES Act that Congress passed a few weeks ago provided states with about $400 million in federal funding to implement election upgrades. But according to experts and according to election officials who have done the math, it will cost around $2 to $4 billion to actually get elections in a good place before the November election. So Congress needs to appropriate far more money, billions, not millions, to states in order to get the job done.
Wow. So CARES provided, let me just get these numbers straight. CARES provided, the CARES Act, that was the stimulus money. They provided states with $400 million, but we need up to $4 billion. $4 billion. Now, I have to ask you, you're privy to all this hacking going on by the Russians. You hear about election protection, election security. Is this part of the formula to make sure that our elections are safe and secure? Is this part of it, this funding you're talking about?
Absolutely. So anytime we're talking about election changes, voting changes, election security is at top of mind. So the good thing is that moving to more mail ballots, rather than having a lot of people be, continue to vote on those electronic voting machines that still exist at polling places today, with paper ballots, we have a hard paper trail that election officials can rely upon when they're conducting post-election audits. So moving to more mail ballots, it's certainly not a bad thing. It's a good thing, in fact. But
yeah,
we do worry about some states allowing voters, because of everything going on, because of postal delays, allowing voters to return their voted ballots by email, fax, or any kind of online portal. We haven't seen any real moves to that extent as of yet through the primaries, but we do worry about states doing that in the November general election, and that would be terribly problematic because returning ballots in that way risks either the voters' votes actually being changed through hacking or some kind of virus being attached to an email or a fax that could then infect the whole system and corrupt election results.
Jeez. Now, you're aware the Postal Service is running out of money. That makes this situation even more complicated if they don't fix this, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the people who are really going to suffer are rural voters who already don't have great access to postal services. And I think that the administration's stance currently that, you know, the Postal Service doesn't need more money, is really a disservice to not only just Americans in general who are relying on postal services for critical packages and other things, but for voters who, as we move to more mail ballots, are going to miss their chance to vote because the Postal Service isn't going to be able to do its job. And that, like, just... So the fact that the administration has taken the stance that it won't support the U.S. Postal Service is anti-democratic because that the U.S. Postal Service is going to be like carrying the success of November's elections on its shoulders and needs to be supported and needs to be given the money that it needs.
Wow. So is there any support in probably in the House for what you're talking about as far as getting more money to protect our voting system in America? But I mean, you live it right in Washington, and it seems like in the Senate, that's where good legislation seems to die. But what kind of support are we getting as far as that? You said it needs $2 to $4 billion. You think we can get there before the before November? What's your thoughts?
You know, I hope so. So the House, the draft that the House submitted for the CARES Act, 4 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago or so, actually included $4 billion for states to upgrade their election systems, which was great. Of course, you know, Mitch McConnell and Senate Republicans were never going to allow that to pass. They too, like Wisconsin's legislature, have proven time and time again that they have no interest in protecting voting rights and protecting voters. And so, you know, $400 million was sort of a drop in the bucket because nobody wanted to really seem like they were totally dismissing voting rights in America. But, I mean, it's really, as I said, it was a drop in the bucket. And I am concerned that we're going to be seeing the same sort of trickle of money occurring again and again. Instead of getting states all of the funding now so that they actually have time to implement all these changes, because time is of the essence. A lot of these things are going to take a long time for states to successfully implement, and voters have to be educated about these changes so that they know how to use them.
Right.
And if Congress keeps delaying allocating the entire $4 billion, states are going to be making changes up until Election Day, and voters are going to be disenfranchised.
All right, Danielle, we have a lot to cover here in a short amount of time, as you indicated. Danielle Root, thank you so much for your time on this. AmericanProgress.org if you want to read more about this issue. Let's circle back in a couple months, see how things are going on this issue, okay?
Sounds great.
Okay, keep up the fight. Daniel Rude, on behalf of the Center for American Progress. Again, that website, AmericanProgress.org. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, our segment with Kellyanne Ferraro and Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.